Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey everyone, thanks for tuning in to this episode of The Aftermath. Today we'll be speaking with guest expert Dr. Julian Hume, avian paleontologist, artist specializing in reconstruction of extinct species, and co-author of the critically acclaimed book, Lost Land of the Dodo. Let's hear what he has to say about the extinction of the dodo bird. Hi Julian, thank you so much for joining us today.
No problem at all.
Now, you have a very specific area of expertise. Can you explain to our listeners what it is you specialize in?
Right. Well, I'm actually something called an avian paleontologist, which is a bit of a mouthful and actually means someone who studies old birds, old bird bones in particular. And I'm a research associate at the Natural History Museum in London, and I specialize in island birds and particularly island bird extinctions, and one of the most famous birds of them all, the dodo bird from Mauritius.
So tell us about your experience, you know, or your relationship to the dodo bird. Why did you start researching the bird?
When I graduated from university, all of my pals were doing sort of local paleo work, so in other words, digging for fossils around the miserable south coast of the UK and so on. And I decided that I would specialize in any extinct birds that came from tropical islands so I could get some sun, tan, cocktails, and all that stuff. And what better place to go than Mauritius, where the dodo once lived?
So you saw an opportunity, let's just say.
I was always interested in Mauritius in particular. That's the honest truth. And also looking at the other animals that became extinct from that island, because the dodo was just one of many that disappeared because of human interference.
Right. And why was the dodo only found on the island?
The dodo is a bird called an endemic bird. So in other words, only found in one place. And it just so happens by pure chance that the dodo, the ancestral dodo, was in fact a pigeon. A lot of people don't know that. The dodo is actually a giant flightless pigeon. The ancestor was a flying pigeon that managed to find Mauritius. When it arrived there, there were no, this is the most important thing of all, there were no terrestrial or land-living mammals. And so when those pigeons landed on Mauritius, they basically had the island to themselves. So they didn't need to fly. And they got bigger and bigger over time, and they became an endemic to that island, found nowhere else on the planet.
Do we know anything about the dodo's lifestyle?
Very, very fortunately, Mauritius was one of the very last places discovered by humans. So when humans first arrived there, the island was virtually still intact. So everything was still alive. The forest was still there. And very fortunately, although you imagine these weren't trained scientists, these were mariners who had traveled a long time at sea, but they just happened to mention in their accounts, in daily journals, little snippets of information of what they saw. And that included very small snippets of information about the dodo bird. So we can put those together and start building up an idea of how the dodo lived on its island home.
And what was that? What were some of its characteristics?
Well, what we do know, and we still know very little, unfortunately, was that this was a giant flightless pigeon that inherited some of the characteristics of when it could fly. Now, there's one thing about pigeons and doves, and they're called, for example, you heard of gentle doves. This is just not true. They are incredibly aggressive birds. They will fight to the death, sometimes over food, over territory. And the dodo itself inherited that characteristic. It was very, very aggressive. So the idea that this poor, dumb bird was just sitting there and people could go up and kill it was just not true. And in fact, there's two wonderful accounts by mariners who actually saw it alive. One said that the war weapon was its mouth. So in other words, it was using its beak to bite. Another one said, do not approach them too close because they bite mightily hard. So they inherited that character of aggressiveness. And it was probably because of territory. The island was small, very limited territory. So the dodo actually inherited that aggression to defend a territory against rival males.
What were some of these depictions, earlier depictions and illustrations of the dodo bird? And why were they drawn that way?
There's lots of theories about this, and a lot of it is bad art. They weren't very good artists. They were probably drunk on rum as well, so it didn't help the situation at all. But in fact, if you look at the very few genuine dodo drawings, illustrations that we know were taken from live birds, they're actually quite different from all of the images that have become the standard feature of the bird, you know, this big fat overweight thing. And in fact, it's very untrue. Those original drawings, although not very good, show the bird as quite much a slim bird, much more athletic. And certainly there's one report that said that they could run very fast once they got in amongst the rocks. So in other words, if you get one in the open, you could catch it. But if it got into the forest in amongst the rocks, it was very, very agile. You couldn't actually, a human could not catch one. And my idea behind it is that at the time, the early 17th century, the very first cattle breeds and pig breeds were being developed. And when you saw these early paintings of these very first domestic animals, these wonderful illustrations and paintings, they showed them as literally square blocks of meat on legs. They were the best, the fattest, most incredibly indulgent illustration of one of these breeds. And that kind of rubbed off on the dodo. So each person who painted it wanted theirs to be the fattest, the best, the most extraordinary of all.
Wow, it's the opposite of social media these days.
Indeed, yes. Fake news, though, of course.
So, how did we get to the bad reputation that the dodo bird has these days? How did those pictures or those illustrations lead us here?
Right. Well, unfortunately, this still occurs to this day, people take these images at the base level. So in other words, they look at them and say, well, they were done by an artist at that time. They must be accurate. And there's a lot of influence from that. And you've got to see through it. You've got to see the reason behind. I'm actually a professional artist as well as a scientist. So I can actually see past what these artists and these early depictions were trying to show. But unfortunately, they stood the test of time. And one character, he was actually the founder of the Natural History Museum in London, Richard Owen. He was particularly fascinated by the dodo, and he used all of his influence to actually get the very first dodo fossils when they came out of Mauritius. And he produced a monograph on the bird depicting it as this big fat thing. And because of his reputation and because of his status, he started everyone believing that's how this bird was in life. And that was in the 1870s, 1870s. And it stood with us to this day.
I've heard some rumors about Owen. He seemed to be a very a bombacious, I guess, character.
He certainly was. And in fact, I won't talk too much about it because it's quite a long story. But in order to get those first dodo bones, he actually blackmailed a competitor out of actually doing anything with them. Because it was actually Alfred Newton who was wanted to become the first professor of comparative anatomy in Cambridge, and Newton was Owen was going to oversee and support his application to become a professor. And when Newton first got those dodo bones, Richard Owen said to him, "If you do anything with them, I shall make sure you never become a professor." So Alfred Newton had to back off, allowing Richard Owen to do what he wanted with them. And it was Richard Owen who published on that tour. They never spoke again afterwards. Alfred Newton got his professorship, but that's how Richard Owen got his first dodo bones.
Wow.
By academic blackmail. Incredible.
That is some paleontologist drama with a capital D.
And I'm still the same now. I blackmail everyone to get the best material, you know.
Well, that's how you got into Mauritius, right?
That's right. The first time there was by pure blackmail. Worked a treat.
So why did the dodo bird go extinct? What is the theory that you find most plausible?
Right. Well, if you read anything about it, it was humans hunted the dodo to extinction, which is just not true. But it was humans who caused the dodo's extinction inadvertently. The reason being was that on Mauritius, when the dodo was still alive, there was never more than 50 to 70 people on that whole island. And they were restricted to small areas of the coast and so on. So actually physically overhunting the dodo to extinction was impossible for those few people there. But what they did do was they started introducing animals. First off, rats arrived, and they were inadvertent stowaways, and they would have caused havoc with competition for food, maybe attacking eggs of dodos and so on. But it was pigs and deer that were introduced by the Dutch very early, about 1607, on Mauritius, that caused the real problems, because deer would have competed for food, and pigs would have certainly taken a ground. The dodo was ground nesting, had a nest on the ground, probably only laid one egg every 2 years. They would have eaten the chicks and eggs every time they came across them, and they were ultimately the reason why the dodo became extinct.
Ah, so do you think they adapted in any way to the, you know, new invaders and their crew?
Well, there's, you know, actually there's some truth in that. And what we know from the early accounts of the Dutch who were on Mauritius at that time, for example, there was a guy who was keeping some of the local fauna in captivity on Mauritius in order to see how long he could keep them alive, in order to send them on ships to be sent as gifts to Japan, back to Europe and so on. And so he kept these and he made notes on how you could possibly keep these animals alive. And what he found was when the Dutch first arrived on Mauritius, not the dodo, but the dodo was probably exactly the same. The parrots, there were at least three species of parrot on Mauritius originally. They were so tame that the Dutch didn't even need to shoot them. They could just wave a stick in the air, knock them out of the sky, food. They could hold out a hand and 10 would land on their hand and they'd just take as many as they wanted. By the 1650s, so about 20, 30, 40 years later, the parrots were very wary of humans. As soon as they saw them, would fly away. And he found it very, very difficult to catch one. So they had learned to avoid humans in that short space of time. So maybe dodos would have done the same, but because they were flightless, they couldn't really get anywhere. And so they didn't have as much chance of survival as a flying bird would have done.
Oh. So why is there such little surviving evidence about the dodo bird?
You've got to imagine that, as I said earlier, that there was very few trained naturalists going on any of these, or even learned souls, you know, anyone who was able to take notes, read, write, and so on. And so these guys who wrote these snippets up would just see something, and they would maybe just interested that the bird was not very good to eat. That was most often said, that it was not a good eat. It was too tough and so on. And they never said anything else. And it was just occasionally someone, there was one mariner who said they eat raw fruit. And that's the only reference that they were eating fruit. There's nothing else to say what they were doing. And so we're relying on these little snippets of information that these people left. And unfortunately, by the time the first naturalists went to Mauritius, just about everything was gone anyway. It was well over 150 years later. So dodos by that time were long extinct.
Now, you were part of a team of experts that recreated a virtual 3D model of the dodo. What was that experience like, and what did you learn about the bird in the process?
I work in two dimensions because of artwork. And when you actually can get the three dimensions and build something up, you suddenly see things that you never noticed before. Just for example, the way the bones fit together, there's hundreds of dodo bones available, which is very, very fortunate. You can actually reconstruct the dodo in terms of skeleton. And when you fit the bones back together in the way they should be back together, and you do it three-dimensionally on a computer screen, suddenly you see little things that the bird may not have been able to have its legs close together, or it must have been more upright in its pose, just purely by the way the bones fit together. So you can actually see a lot more of what was going on in the dodo's anatomy. And then if you know enough about those early accounts, that the little snippets of information, for example, I mentioned that they were very difficult to catch once they got amongst rocks, you can actually see it in their anatomy that they were quite long-legged birds and certainly had the capability to be quite agile. So you can actually link the two together, which is a wonderful thing. And you don't get that from looking two-dimensionally, you know, through pictures, art, drawings, and so on.
Sure. So I'm assuming this is when you realized it had knees. And what is, first of all, I went down a rabbit hole after I learned that dodos had knees, and you know, learning that really what we think of the knee, like in a flamingo, is really its ankle.
Yes, I know. It's all back front. It's the hardest thing to explain, actually, because people, you know, they say they got knees, and they say, well, no, they got the knees are back to front, you know, because they're facing the wrong way. And actually, what you're seeing on almost all birds is that you've got the extension of the foot, so you've got the ankle, and that from the ankle, which is what people consider to be the knee, down to the toes is just basically the extension of the foot with the toes, and they walk on the tips of their toes. And what's hidden is that the knee, facing the right way, is underneath the feathers buried in the bird's body, so you never see it.
Ah, so it's wearing a skirt, essentially.
It's wearing a skirt of feathers, so you never see the knee. And they keep their knees nice and warm.
That's very demure of them to make sure their skirt goes all the way to the ankle.
Yes, right.
Now, tell us about this ecosystem that then disappeared after the dodo's extinction.
Like all islands around the world, there's no islands on this planet that haven't been modified in some way. You know, we talk about Hawaiian Islands, the Mascarenes, which is Mauritius, where the dodo lived, the Galapagos Islands, all of them have been now changed, and so many beyond recognition, like Easter Island, which was forested at one time, and so on. And so this wonderful tool that we're using now is we look at, in fact, it's more important than actually finding the bones themselves, because in the early days, 19th century heyday of paleontology, bird paleontology, was that you look for bones and you name new species found from the bones and so on. What we do now is that the bones are nice and interesting and, you know, support the study, but look at the sediment. And in that sediment, I worked on Mauritius last year, and luckily, it's going to be my last trip because until we get a release again from COVID, but I worked on Mauritius last year, and we found this marsh site that had wonderful sediments that contained not only seeds of the plants that once lived alongside the dodo, we found dodo bones as well, but also, most importantly, pollen. pollen preserves very well. Mm-hmm. And then you can actually reconstruct the environment of the dodo. And that site is 14,500 years old. So we now can look at what the forest was like when the dodo was on Mauritius 14,500 years ago, and actually reconstruct it down to as many species as we can. And then we can then look at a more recent sequence, which was 4,000 years ago with another site with pollen samples and so on. And you can see the changes over time. And then if you look at the modern times, just about everything's gone. It's almost 100% loss of that type of forest. So you've got 14,500 years, 4,000 years present day, and you can see those changes. And in there, you can put a pin when the last mention of the dodo was and so on. And you can see where they fit in as that forest disappeared.
So do you think that the dodo would still be alive today? Is there anything that could have saved it?
I reckon so. You imagine in those hideous times of travel, this is during, dodos were transported around the world, and they survived the incredible journeys when, you know, human cost of long distance travel in those days was very, very high. They, for example, ships, when they went on those cruises for spice trade, for example, they were 18 months at sea, and the sailors were sick, scurvy was rife, and sometimes a third of the crew would perish on the trip. Mm. So imagine a bird, like an exotic bird like a dodo, surviving that voyage and arriving alive. One certainly came to Britain. One was in Amsterdam, the Netherlands. One certainly made it alive to, two made it alive to India. And one certainly made it alive to Japan. So you imagine if there was the mindset was there that we want to bring these back, breed them and make up a colony, and they had the expertise, dodos would still be with us. That's for certain.
Yeah, they seem like a sturdy yeah. bird.
Tough birds, and their best diet would have been ship's cookies and dry biscuits probably, and they still managed to survive, you know, so and probably a tot of rum to help them sleep at night. That was about it.
So I have to ask you, at the end of the day, if you had to pick one person, or it can also be a concept, that is to blame for the extinction of the dodo bird, who or what would that be?
I wouldn't really blame anyone. What I do is I blame today, where we're making the same mistakes we made in our very infancy, very early maritime travel. The concept of extinction didn't exist. So if you hunted an animal or you introduced pigs, you had no concept that you were actually going to do this irreparable damage. And you had no concept that if you hunted out a bird in one area, there was huge numbers in another area. They just weren't where you were. And that was the mentality. So how can you blame people? And also, often these mariners turning up at Mauritius, they would have had two things on their mind when they arrived. They weren't there to record bird song and enjoy the views. They would have been starving, on the point of death often. So if they saw something living, the first thing was, one, can they catch it? Two, can they eat it? That was the basic thing on their mind. So you can't blame anyone for the extinction of the dodo, for sure. But I think the saddest thing, and where I do blame now, is governments, that they're making the same mistakes, total disregard, yet we know what's going to be the ultimate consequence, and they are not doing anything about it. We can learn from the dodo, but we're not learning from the dodo. That's the sad point.
Well, Julian, thank you so much for talking to us today. And really, we got to know the dodo in a way we hadn't before.
Okay, great.
Well, now you get back to Mauritius, or, well, next year, I guess you'll have to wait.
Yeah, I know this miserable England at the moment, miserable, dark, cold. Now you just reminded me what I'm missing.
Yeah, that's right. Thanks again.
Thanks very much. Cheers. Thank you.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love.
Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Okay, I have two new obsessions that I need to share with you. Impress No Glue Press-On Manis and Impress Press-On Falsies Lashes. Trust me, these are getting ready game changers. Both require no glue, so there is no damage to your natural nails and lashes, no mess, and no annoying dry times. Just one step and you're done. Boom. Instant glam. Visit impressbeauty.com/presson and use code PRESSON25 at checkout for 25% off Impress manicure and Press-On falsies.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
With us today, we have producer Amanda Lund.
Hi, Rebecca.
And fact checker Chris Smith.
Hi, everybody. And hello from our landscapers outside. You can probably hear. Oh, and the dogs.
Oh, everyone's saying hi.
It's a chaotic morning.
Now, Amanda, can you, before we even get started about our wonderful, wonderful conversation with Julian, tell our listeners about the new season of The Big Ones.
Yes, thank you, Rebecca. So The Big Ones is a podcast that I host along with my friend and Irio's co-founder, Maria Blasucci. And we each episode, we sit down with a comedian guest to discuss a moral or ethical dilemma. They're big or small. And it's really fun. So we just launched our new season. I think it's maybe our fourth or fifth season now. So there's a whole back catalog. And our premiere episode is based on Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. The dilemma is, would you steal Willy Wonka's gobstopper to lift your family out of poverty?
Just a really, that's a really good one to just sink your teeth into.
Well, now hang on. You're sort of playing with the plot of that movie a little bit, right? Because he doesn't steal the gobstopper to save the family, right? He steals the gobstopper because he wants it.
Well, no, actually. So you're confusing the gobstopper with some of the laughing liquid that he and his grandpa Joe drink. So he is, before he goes to the chocolate factory, he's approached by one of Willy Wonka's rivals that says, hey, steal the company's secrets and I'll pay you for them. And as you recall, of course, they are living in horrible circumstances where all the grandparents sleep right. in one bed. So right. this is a real moral dilemma for Charlie.
After that scene is the one where Lawrence Fishburne offers him the red pill or the blue pill, and he takes the red one, right?
Mm. Well, you know, funny you should mention that. We've actually done the Matrix Dilemma as well on the podcast.
I mean, it's such a good podcast. It's so funny, so fun. And I feel like our listeners, there's a lot of crossover, you know?
That's true.
So I think they'll enjoy it.
We've done the Titanic, so that would be a good episode for people to check out. Chris and Rebecca have both been on the podcast, mm-hmm. so if you're interested in getting some of this alarmist, you know, a little bit extra, come check it out, The Big Ones, on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen.
Yeah, and just for your mind's eye, when I was on the podcast, Maria was laying down completely horizontally through the whole episode.
So. I think she does that yes. for most episodes.
Yes, she has a very mellow vibe, not like any of us.
So do we have any business to attend to before we get started?
I just want to say we've been loving all the reviews you guys have been leaving. We read them. They make us so happy and they help the podcast become more discoverable. So just going to shout out a few here. Okay, so this comes in from Herco_CL. Fun and you will learn some stuff. 5 stars. Perfect to listen to while cleaning the kitchen. Great mix of very serious tragedies and more light stuff. Great experts. And then this really made me laugh. She goes, or she or he or they say, I love that Amanda lets them do their thing.
That's so funny.
My favorite episode so far is the one about the Chilean miners. So you guys are welcome. I let you do your thing.
Thank
that
you, Amanda.
Viewer just summarized, I think, our relationship in 6 words.
I let them do their thing. I could stop it, but I let it happen.
Just the power she gives you. And what the fuck is their thing?
I don't know. I really don't know.
Whatever it is, we've got it.
But that's exactly what happens on our podcast.
Yeah. Amanda does let me just go on and on.
Whatever the thing is you're doing is great. I love it.
And you know what? This reminds me. I think it's a great idea. I think our listeners should go on there and tell us what their favorite episode is, because that will help other listeners dip their toes. They can start with the episode that you like.
That's such a great idea. So thank you for everyone who's been reading and reviewing.
Wait, but I saw another one. I saw another review, Amanda, that I wanted to read. And it said, I do love you all. 5 stars. I love you all truly, but Amanda has my heart. She is adorably kind, and her realization of what the Spice Girls lyrics meant was priceless.
That was an authentic moment, I have to say. I'm not always adorably kind, but that was a true moment that really shocked me.
You know, and let's not all go on there and say who our favorite one is. Let's keep it more to the episodes. Yes. I'm getting a feeling that it's going to be a little lopsided here. But
yeah, no need to call us out.
Yeah, but thank you, Amy Greens, for that that review. Now let's transition. You know, that is a perfect segue. Amy Greens
is
a perfect segue to our conversation with Dr. Julian Hume, which, by the way, I wish I had taken a paleontology class, you know, with him, because he was so charming and so fun. Seems like
I know. You two had good chemistry.
We did. Yeah. We got each other's humor, I think.
Yes. Sorry, Chris.
How good? I mean, what do you mean by that? No, he was awesome, energetic, and he made me miss jolly old England, which...
Oh, I love
it. I know.
It's just the best. The people there are the best.
It really is the best.
And I have to say, I looked up his artwork, and it's incredible.
Yes, really? I recommend that our listeners check out his website. It's julianhume.co.uk. And look at, he's got many illustrations of the dodo and other extinct bird species. It's really cool.
And I like we'll get into what he says after he talks, right?
Oh, yeah, let's talk about what he said, because I don't know.
He's talking now.
Oh, he's talked already?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's already talked.
Okay. showing the magic.
Sorry, guys.
We had a little confusion about where we were going to put all the plugs, but yes, they're after Julian's talked now. So let's get into it, because he made some really interesting points.
Yes. Do you want to... Amanda, why don't you share the ones you wrote down?
Okay, so a few points. That Mauritius is a crazy magical island. Just, I want to say that off the bat.
Yes.
It seems really cool.
Also, he verified that. I remember, I'm a big Mauritius supporter and lover.
Yes, I know Mark was trying to sort of, like, you know, get a little jabs in at Mauritius, but yeah. I think this has shown Mark that the error of his ways. the ancestral dodo was a pigeon.
Yeah, that's right.
That is crazy. Mm-hmm. Also, the fact that dodos were aggressive, I think we may have gone a little bit hard on the Dutch and imperialism, and I think that we could have, like, and Rebecca, you wanted to do this, go a little bit harder on the rats, pigs, and the deers.
That's right. He did mention the rats particularly, and he said they were the worst of the worst. So I did want to go, but, you know, I understand. Sometimes we like to think of bigger picture, and that's good, too.
Yes, and then one other thing I wanted to throw up on the board in retrospect was the fact that the dodos couldn't fly, because he mentioned those parrots that were able to adapt, and the fact that the dodos couldn't fly made them more susceptible.
That is so true. We should have put that up on the board. Yeah, Chris.
Yeah, no, that's all correct. I was going to say also that I think we were way off about, I mean, not only Mauritius, but just the whole, our take on the Darwin element of them not needing to, them being sort of fat and lazy and not needing to run away from predators. Because as Dr. Hume pointed out, actually, Mauritius was a dangerous place where there were predators and there was a lot of fighting over the land because it was very small. So they were actually really good. He said they were fast on rocks. They weren't easily caught by humans. So, you know, I always, you know, I am a scientist by trade, and I always like to admit when I get my data and my figures wrong. So I got to get back in the lab. I got to punch the numbers, and I got to come out the other side like a better scientist for this.
We're all learning, Chris. You'll get there.
But to that point, he said that Dodo was aggressive.
Yes.
Right.
Full on aggressive. So that, I mean, that does cast a different light on the dodo.
Use the word agile and fast as right. well.
Now, I wrote down something I think we missed putting up on the board was that, and we did touch on this, but maybe not fully, was the concept of extinction not existing.
Yes, that was fascinating. And something, that's why I think we went too hard on the Dutch.
Right. We might have gone a little overboard there. And another thing I wrote down was the conditions of travel for the sailors. If there had been better conditions for the sailors, maybe once they got off of the boat, they wouldn't have been so ravenous and like wanting to just like kill and eat things.
Yeah, I think that's a great point.
They should have traveled like the Titanic. Or, you know, a luxury cruise line.
Yeah, that would have been a lot better.
Bring a freaking salad to go, for God's sake. I mean, geez.
Just a reminder that we sent the Dutch to jail and we slapped imperialism.
Yes, and Julian ultimately said that to blame were today's governments for making the same mistakes. Not learning
kind of
from
loophole.
Mistakes. Yeah. But that's okay.
I like that idea.
I like to think about that. Yeah.
I like the idea of using the dodo, honoring the memory of the dodo by protecting the species that are endangered today.
I love that. I really think it could be the poster boy. Poster boy?
Ooh,
yeah.
Yeah.
Poster
the poster
bird.
Boy.
Poster bird. Poster bird.
You did. I was listening to your interview and you did miss an opportunity. You said the dodo was a sturdy bird, and I almost thought you were going to go a sturdy birdie.
I also used the word bombacious, and I'm pretty sure the word is bombastic. But
I noticed that too.
But I like bombacious.
I was like, you know what, she combined bombastic and bodacious.
Which
does describe Owen too. I mean, sure, why not?
Yeah.
But then later, when you use the word demure, and that was used correctly,
that was used correctly.
Very impressed
Thank
by that.
You.
That's a French word.
Yeah. So we're in the. I know that we're in the history world. We're in the history comedy world, but I kind of want to be in the dictionary world too. And
Ooh.
I feel like we could really, between prudism and bombacious, I feel like we have two winners so far.
Yes, we could definitely, maybe we'll get a word of the year at some point.
Fingers crossed. So do we ultimately think that we should take the, you know, blame away from the Dutch? I mean, I'm all up for the rats again. You know
me. It's so hard. I know. I mean, we were on the right. We were on a path, but there's just so many different options for this. And just his, as someone who I assume not only studies birds, but loves them. I mean, maybe I'm projecting that. I would think if the Dutch and imperialism were really to blame, he would have been mad at them and wanted to sort of give it to them. But because the expert said that, you know, no one is to blame, it does make me rethink.
Right. It's just like the way of the world, the circle of life or something. I mean,
well, how do you put no one in jail?
You don't.
We don't. What do you, we have to put someone.
If we're a just society, nobody would be in jail.
What do you think about this? Cool, Chris.
That was creepy, Chris. Yeah. You were like hovering over Rebecca's shoulder when you said that. And then you just like wander out of frame.
Yeah. Don't worry.
I'm actually floating. You can't see it on Zoom
right
now.
You have no lower body.
No, yes. I'm a vampire.
What do you think about putting the concept of no extinction or a concept of extinction not existing in jail and giving the Dutch the big slap?
Yeah, I could see that. I could see like extinction ignorance. Is that like a good way to say it? And then also maybe this is a good opportunity, Rebecca, for you to wag your finger at the modern. I don't know. Who do you wag your finger at? The mod, like
all of us not learning from our mistakes.
OK, yeah, that would be good.
Bad students.
And also not caring. It's like how many people just don't care about species going extinct. I mean, clearly, with, you know, people don't really care about climate change, so that's a no-no here. You gotta
care.
I'll
tell you who does care is Cher.
She
is currently saving the life of this big elephant. She's like moving it to Cambodia or something.
Yes,
so.
They flew it. I couldn't believe they flew it. It's 9,000 pounds, which, by the way, it had to lose 1,000 pounds so that it could get on the plane. So like for 3 months, they put it on a diet. And
not
then
worth it.
What?
Not worth it.
Yes, it had to lose 1,000 pounds.
Not worth
in
it.
3 months.
I'd rather die.
And then they had to fill up the plane with something like I might get this wrong, but was it 4,000 pounds of food so it could eat during the flight? It might have been 400 pounds of food.
Okay, see, this is what they should have done for the dodo.
We have to do an episode on this. I mean,
it's wild.
It's amazing.
And Cher is funding the whole thing. It's costing like over $200,000.
I'm going to go buy a Cher record.
She rules. I love Cher.
We should give her the big clap.
Yeah. Okay, then I think I'm calling it, Amanda. Okay, so I'll start with the slap. All right. Dutch, you're getting the big slap. Extinction ignorance, you're going to the alarmist jail. And everyone who's not learning from their mistakes and not caring about the extinction of species on the planet or climate change, I'm just going to throw it in there, you're getting the big wag.
Okay, and I gotta find a new sound effect.
wait, I'm not done.
It should be a dog's tail wagging if you could somehow recreate that sound.
I am not done. Cher, you're getting the big clap. I'm just gonna give Cher the big clap every episode, honestly. She deserves it. All right, well, it's good to solve all of the problems. It feels good, right?
Feels amazing.
It does feel amazing. And I'm going to think about the dodo bird every time the parrots. We have a huge parrot population that flies around in Altadena and Pasadena.
Yeah.
And they make all kinds of noise. But, you know, tip your hat to those parrots. They've learned to adapt to us weird humans who let them out of their cages.
And they're yapping away because we stole their ecosystem. You know, we're living in their land, and now they're like, well, we're going to just no sound ordinance on us. Am I right?
It did make me sad when he said the parrots were so friendly at first, and then they learned to stay away from humans because they were whacking them and eating them.
Yeah, we're the worst.
We're the worst.
We really are.
And on that note, everyone, have a wonderful week. And stay tuned for our next episode where we'll be discussing the eggnog riot.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.